Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Friendship. Boy, that word sure evokes many different pictures and feelings in different people's minds and in different cultures. Friendship patterns have been studied by sociologists, and friendship is something that we all need. And some of us don't have enough of it. Some of us have too much of it. But what doesn't get asked is the quality question. We think a good friend is somebody we've known for a long time, somebody with whom we've shared a great deal. That may or may not be. But is that friend good for us? Now, today we're talking about being thankful for our friendship. That's important. At the same time, I want to talk about being discerning and discriminating about friendship. And by the way, do you make a distinction between friends and allies? That's another subject we'll probably get to during our talk today. Friends and allies. What's the distinction? When does an ally become a friend? When does a friend become an ally? Why are we allied? Why are we friends? To what end are we friends? Are our friends like a pacifier? Are they Linus's blanket that we carry around with us as we suck our thumb? Or are they people that are living a robust, engaged life, shoulder to shoulder, facing life's challenges, supporting each other, believing in each other, picking us up when we're down, celebrating us when we're winning? You know the friends, how many of you know the ones that are only there when you're down? They don't support you when you're winning. That's a dicey kind of friend because you only get their deepest affection when you're in trouble, when things aren't going so well. They don't know how to relate to you when you're doing well. And do your friends really lift you up in the world? There's research that says that our lives are a direct reflection of the quality of the lives of the people around us. I don't have exact stats on that, but we'll see if that doesn't come up too. So let's get to our first caller, and we'll start diving into this world of friendship. Those people we're grateful to have in our lives, and we are going to look at maybe some of the people we need to change out. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. We're giving away two free chapters of our book, Transform, today, the Science of Spectacular Living. All you have to do is go to www.rightliving.com/two-free-chapters. We're also going to be giving away another really special, special tool for you to assess your friendship and strategize your friendships. I'd like to start out first with our first caller, Barb. She says, how do I transition from a close friendship to a friendly acquaintance? Now, that's an interesting question, Barb. Talk to us about that, please.
This is a friendship that I made when our daughters were the same age. We'd been very, very close. And she was friends with both me and my husband, who is now my ex. She went through a divorce, and then I went through a divorce, and she's been friends with both of us. And my ex spends an awful lot of time with her. I asked a couple of times to see if this was a romantic relationship, and both times they said no. And I never really picked up that kind of vibe. But I'm just having increasingly difficult time knowing how much information to trust her with. And
wow.
How much information to trust her with, but also for me just trying to navigate the feelings of jealousy and the fact that it seems like they've almost formed kind of like a little de facto family. And
yep.
I just have a hard time, like, feeling I'm on the outside.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So let me go back to something I was referencing earlier. I don't have the research on this. If you're interested, you'd have to write me. And we'll talk about it on a future radio show, and I'll get the statistics from my wife. But, you know, the chances of you having a divorce are much greater when someone you're close to has a divorce. So, so because that person is looking for a solution outside of their marriage, one of the two anyway, and so you're more likely going to look at a solution outside. And so that's interesting. But what you're saying raises a host of questions to me. First of all, my question is how good a friend is she if you don't trust her?
And that's where I'm. And we've even talked about this. We've talked about the feelings of just that come up from me when. She feels like that whatever she says about her life would trigger me being upset. So then she didn't reveal as much about her life. I'd still find out about stuff that my daughter would do with her daughter and her, you know, her dad. And so I still found out this information, and it was just very, very difficult. But on the other hand, she is also someone who will challenge me, who will push me. I mean, in some way, she felt more like an ally rather than someone I got a tremendous amount of comfort from. She was sometimes a little more honest than maybe some of my other friends.
Well, hang on. Let me go back to what you were saying. We've got a really bad connection, by the way. I hope that this is transmitting with better sound than I'm getting, because it's breaking up and it's very hard to understand you. Let me go back to the beginning. What would upset you that she told you about in her life?
I think it was just the things that they were doing, that they'd go, my ex and daughter went camping with her and her daughter. So there was a week-long camping trip in the Ozarks. It was, you know, spending sometimes part of Easter with them. It was their lives are really becoming very enmeshed.
Well, okay, so you were jealous.
Yeah, I was jealous.
And you were jealous because you weren't moving on with your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, other aspects of my life I was moving on with, but I feel a lot better and a lot more centered in my life without making her so much a part of my life anymore.
Uh-huh.
But
so you were somewhat dependent on her.
Yeah, I was.
Okay. And your dependence on her made you more likely to be jealous when they went on this camping trip. I got to tell you, I find it kind of suspicious myself, and I'm questioning, you know, a whole lot of things, but mostly what's going on with you that you aren't moving on with your life and having your time filled with activities that are nourishing and satisfying.
I've been transitioning. I've been doing that in the last couple of months. I've really pulled away from her. We had coffee yesterday, but we hadn't really talked in about a month or so. So I've been pulling more and more away from her. And I get the feeling she's doing that too. Do I somehow need to, I don't want to say formalize this, or talk to her that we're and kind of let her know, saying, yeah, okay, it seems like our friendship has changed.
Starters, what's your problem if they get married?
I think it would, my problem would be that I would have to say that she really couldn't be that friend. You know, she really couldn't be a really friend anymore.
Well, I'm not even on that. I think that it's very awkward. When your husband has your children, you have two?
No, just one.
You have one and she has two?
No, she has one.
Okay, great. So you end up like odd man out.
Yeah.
And when you
yeah.
have your and you when you and your child get together with somebody else and their child, you don't have a somebody else with a child. So you feel very left out. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
you would like to be with your family. And not going to happen.
Yeah.
It is an awkward situation. It's a difficult situation, but what's more difficult is that you were upset and jealous and you didn't find a way to be honest and forthright with her, which indicates to me that you were too dependent on her.
Yeah, I think so. We did back in June talk it out. I just never felt like things got resolved between us. And yeah, you're right. I have needed her, I think, more than she has needed me.
Yeah, I mean that's what's showing up. And you haven't been fully honest with her, and you don't trust she's being fully honest with you. So why not start with talking about that?
Yeah.
And she's going to tell you that she doesn't want to be honest with you because you get so upset.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is are you going to decide to get on with a life you enjoy so she can get on with her life with or without your ex?
Yeah.
See, I don't see why you two can't be good friends, but your friendship was based upon you being the under-adequate of the two. So friendships often have an imbalance, an over-adequate and an under-adequate.
Well, it actually switched. When our friendship started off, I felt like I was the more adequate one, and she would probably say she was somewhat of the mess, but then she got out of a bad marriage, and one that we fully supported her getting out of. And then I went through my own bad marriage, but she has really moved on with her life. So there was definitely a switch.
Well, but there's a problem with this whole idea of a bad marriage, because there are lessons to be learned in marriage, and when you blame it on a bad marriage, you end up not really looking at what the skills are and what the underlying issues are in it. So we've now got a situation where you guys have lived in a thing called the drama triangle together. So, you know, she was clearly a victim to a husband that was a persecutor, and you were her rescuer.
Yes.
And now you're feeling like a victim, and that she and your ex are the persecutors, and you're now on the phone talking to me looking for rescuers. So these are all irresponsible positions, and we're trained into these as human beings. That's why soap operas are so popular, is we live in a great deal of drama in the soap operas. We identify with the victim. We blame
Well, I think one of my ways of dealing with that, because I was getting really tired of being the victim, was to really just kind of not call her, just to really kind of distance myself from her.
Well, the problem with being the victim is you're a victim whether she's there to remind you about it or not, because a victim is a role that you choose in life.
Yeah.
And the reason we choose that role is we don't know how to get ourselves nourished independently. And this gets started out in childhood, where families oftentimes only nourish each other when there's a problem. And so there's a huge opportunity for you right now to learn to be on your own side and to learn to live a nourishing life. And, yeah, you're going to have feelings about your ex and her. You're especially going to have feelings when your ex treats her better than he treated you. And you're going to have feelings that are going to come up. But the question is, what do you do with those feelings? You know, can you use those feelings to go inside and get to know yourself better? It's not about transitioning in the friendship. It's about you being on your own side in such a way that you live a life you love. And probably rather than dealing with her, what you do is you just go off and find great friends. So that when they're off camping, you're off having a great time with your new great friends.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
And then she'll automatically move to the level she should. So I like to think of our life like a baseball team. You have a certain, the nine players you usually put on the field. Those are that's your closest team. Then you've got the bench. You've got another 20 players on the bench or so that you can call on. Then you've got AAA. That's like when you're developing friends. Double A, single A. Those are the minor leagues, but those are where you start putting friends that you're getting to know. So the real question is, do you have an abundance of friends, and are you loving your life? Get to loving your life, and she'll automatically move to whatever level she needs to be at. But underneath it, this drama triangle, Thomas Harris wrote the book, I'm Okay, You're Okay. Great book. And then there's a guy named Karpman who put together this drama triangle. If you'll look them up online, I think you'll enjoy that. It's out of the transactional analysis tradition. But by and large, you learning to live a life that you love is the critical issue. And you check, have you read our Transformed book?
Yes.
Okay, great. So take that, start working on your deeper yearning. Because any time you get disturbed, you had a yearning that you weren't meeting. And take on the challenge of starting to meet those yearnings, so that you can wish them a great time, fucking their eyes out, doing whatever what they want to do with the kids, and because you want them to have a great life, because you're having a great life, and you feel sorry for them that they're not having your life.
I like that.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Barb.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care. So you're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. And we would love to have you get our Transform training bundle. It's the Transform Weekend on video, and you can get that with the link. It's a training, a home study course with the video and the workbook, and you can also have the audio version so that you can listen to it while you're in the car. You get the Transform book, and you can have a seat registered for you at our in-person training. It's normally $297 today. And as a promotion, it's $97. The promotional code is Blog Bundle, BLOGBUNDLE, at www.ttbundle.com. That's ttbundle.com. Our second caller is William. He says that he feels like he can't find real friends because of cultural differences. What can he do? Hey, William, hi.
Hey, Bob, hey.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I've been in the States for almost 12 years now, from Jordan, the Middle East. And when I came over here, I was 21 years old, coming from a big city, having a nightlife, finishing college, so really busy with a lot of friends from childhood. Coming to the States, didn't have many people around, and so I made new friends, and one of those friends is my wife right now. And it was kind of a good thing that me and her, we share a lot of stuff and start with the friendship, and then we got married. So now we're kind of more or less than friends, depends on the day. And but that feeling of hanging out with a true friend, I don't have that feeling anymore. I think mostly because of the cultural difference between me and the group of people I hang out with.
What do you mean by cultural difference?
So, last week we were hanging out. We have a men's group at the church, and they talk about football, they talk about baseball. Of course, I have no idea how to play any of those games. The political aspect, I get involved in it a little bit, but it's not my passion, so I try to avoid talking about it because sometimes it can get really ugly, so I try to avoid talking about politics. So there isn't true connection between me and people I call friends. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Well, first of all, we don't have the greatest connection. I only heard about four-fifths of what you were saying. But I understood that you're trying to avoid some of the tougher things like politics. And, when we're little growing up, we're herd animals. Our friendships aren't that much personal. We have certain people we like more than other people. We go around our neighborhood together when we're, 4 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old. And we do more things with what we think of as friends. Then we go to another stage in life. We get to high school, and then we develop new sets of friends. In college, we make other friends. And those are friends that I call situational friends. They're not friends around values. And my sense of real friendship, for me, has to do with shared values and really getting to know each other. Politics is one small part of values, but there is a lot more in values. And it requires, the older we get, the greater the demand on us for the skills of friendship as opposed to having friends and circumstances. And it sounds like your skills of friendship have been fine with your wife, that you've been able to become friendly with people in the church. But what you're saying is that one intimate heart-to-heart friend, those heart-to-heart friends where you really feel a deep affection and caring for each other, is what you're missing. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of that has to do with how deeply we can touch each other and how fast we can touch each other deeply. Because that kind of friendship tends to get set up when we really get to know each other. I had I'd made a new friend, and he and I hit it off. We had great conversations, and then we had a conflict arose, and it got very heated and very very uncomfortable. And I was afraid that I'd lost a new friend. And we decided that a lot of that was we were having an exchange on the internet. And we decided to take it off of that because it had gotten so hot, it wasn't funny. When I talked to him on the phone the next time, I was really afraid of what he was going to say. And he got on the phone and he said, "Wow, man, I haven't been hooked with anybody like that. And I've learned so much." And he thanked me for the conflict, and I was so relieved because I had looked at my side of the conflict. And now we refer to each other as brothers from another mother. And when we get together, it's very warm and very intimate. And we were very pleased that we were able to have him introduce him to our pilgrims when we were just in California. He's a Hollywood producer. And he was able to talk about spiritual cinema because he looks at movies as a transformational tool. So a lot of it depends on how much you risk with friends too, William. How much are you risking with people?
Well, yeah, the other problem I have is not just with guys. So for a reason, I feel more connected with females than males, and in the same time, and that's where the other problem happens. A lot of people come to me and tell me, "Oh, William, you're playing with fire. You should not go out just you and another coworkers or other." For me, it's a friend, and that's where I feel more connected to my female friends than my male friends, mostly because I think we don't talk about sports, we don't talk about politics, we talk just about average life things. And when I hang out with the guys, like, they want to talk about sports, they want to talk about politics, and I don't feel much connection with them. So for me, I consider one of my very good friends, other than my wife, as another female friend I'm very friends with. And for this culture, or any culture, they look at it as a weird thing. It's like, oh, William is hanging out with this female friend, and that's bad. William is cheating on his wife, or anything like that. But it does make, in my mind, I try to avoid these situations, but I feel very comfortable and very friendly. She's one of my best friends.
William, hang on. I want to interrupt you. Where are you in the birth order of your original family?
Sorry? I'm the oldest.
Yeah, you're the oldest.
Yeah.
As an oldest son, you really know how to please women, because the firstborn child works very hard to please mom. And so it's much easier for you to connect with women. The other thing is, how many kids in your family growing up, William?
There's only three of us, me and two siblings.
Okay, so three of you. And how much younger are the other two?
My brother is 2 years and my sister is 10 years.
Okay, good. So as a firstborn child, the firstborn child competes to maintain what's called a position of primacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a, and it's also incumbent on the firstborn son to be better than other men, but to not be like them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be very manly, and you know how to read women, you know how to relate to women, but there's this unconscious conflict with men, and it gets very involved in terms of your conflict, your desire to please your mom, and how you got in between your mom and your dad when you were real little. But there's an unconscious conflict between you and other men that would be happening in Jordan, China, South Africa, anywhere we sent you. And so it's going to be harder for you to make relations with men than women. And it will be that way for a number of complex reasons until you do some of the deeper personal work that allows you to let go of some of the competition that is unconscious. I'm not talking about something that you think about. I'm talking about a way that you carry yourself that will make it harder for you to just get buddy-buddy with the guys and get into the underbelly to underbelly conversation with men.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty long journey. I don't have any magical solution for that, because that's an unconscious structure that's built in, and it's across cultures. The only real exception to that are Chinese families where you have a one-child family, and that's a whole nother story, because in China, in certain segments of the Chinese society, everybody just had one child, and it was a completely different story. But this is Alfred Adler's big work in psychology. It's called Sibling Rivalry. And the firstborn child attempts to maintain what's called a position of primacy. And you succeeded in that. So, of course, you're great with women. But this issue with men is going to take work. And I don't have a simple answer for that for you, William.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is, if you'll do your personal growth work, and if you'll learn to identify your deeper emotions in the moment, in the here and now, you'll be able to follow your inner yearnings in a way that will actually cause you to reprogram that. But it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. And the pattern I had, I was a firstborn son and a firstborn grandson. So what I'm and believe me, I knew how to please women. And still do. And still do.
Yeah.
And this man thing was something that I worked on to the point where I feel like a man among men and enjoy it and am able to enjoy men at a huge level. So I wish you luck on that journey, because it's a journey. The only thing I'm going to warn you is, don't blame it on cultural differences. because it's your family issues that are going on there, William.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. By the way, this is an important part of the journey, is to learn. The other thing that William's going to be facing is that he's going to be facing the fact that he lives his life pleasing others. And when he hits his midlife crisis, it's going to hit him kind of hard because he's gotten good at pleasing others, good at especially at reading others, mind-reading women, understanding women, having great conversations with women. But he's not necessarily leading his life primarily for himself. And so at different change points in our lives, the 40-year itch, a 50-year itch, then we start having these issues arise, and doing this work can be very, very useful for a marriage and family stability. So we've got our next caller is Marlon. And how do I function in friendship without one party feeling used? And why does it feel like such a chore to keep in touch with people? Tell me about that, Marlon.
Oh, man. Okay. So I'm afraid. Just wanted to put that out there. Let's see. So as far as using individuals, I don't know. It seems like lately, and especially with females, I've been getting feedback, you know, and the feedback that I've been getting is, I feel like you use me, you know, and I've kind of shared what I'm doing with my personal growth work, you know, and kind of incorporated some of the female friends that I've had so far. And I don't know, it's like, yeah, I feel like you, with the comment that I've gotten is, you know, I feel like you use me for your personal growth stuff, you know. And the other example is with, you know, why is it such a chore when you keep in touch with people? And you touched on it earlier about situational friends. You know, it's like, I don't know, is it, now that I guess I'm more conscious to what it is that I really want, when I try to have conversations with, mostly with my male friends, you know what I'm saying? It's like talking to a wall. You know, I try to take the conversation deeper, and I get a response that's like, you know, I can't even respond to the response, you know? So it's really, I'm kind of confused, you know, as to where to go and what like form versus function, you know, like, I don't know what a friend would look like for me and, you know, kind of, I don't know, I guess I got something in my own head about being a friend that, I don't know, what is being a friend versus, you know, just being there for people. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
something
well,
tangible
my,
versus just good conversation.
My definition of friendship is that we're each wind under each other's wings. And that of course, we support each other. But a used means one person is being supported and the other is not. And used usually happens when there's a significant difference in the values that the friends have. And we've got a wonderful friendship grid where you can actually identify your primary values with friends. And then you can put together the names of different friends and you rate them by the different values in different areas, and you can weight the different values to really look at if somebody's, once a person's feeling used, and then usually that means that it's not a balanced friendship. It's not a give and take. And there's data in that. And I don't know what the data is without getting into it much more closely, but I'd really suggest that you get this. If you send an email to justin@rightliving.com. Justin, J-U-S-T-I-N, at rightliving.com. He'll send that out to you and anybody else that wants it. And it's really very valuable to start looking and evaluating and assessing your friendships.
Okay, yeah. I guess what I've been trying to do lately is, you know, just feel like I belong, you know, amongst groups, you know, and I try to form some type of meaningful bond, you know, so it doesn't feel like the same chore, you know, when I'm keeping in touch with people.
Look, meaningful bonds are always what matters. And everybody has meaning, whether if people have kids or brothers or sisters or families or friends. We all live a day where we get our feelings hurt, where we have hopes, we have fears. And if you want to really be a good friend, find out people's hopes, their fears, their hurts. Understand them.
Yeah.
Encourage
yeah.
them. And then share your hopes, your fears, your hurts. And see if you get encouraged in return. There's a difference between encouragement and disempowerment. You want to make sure that you're really lifting each other up, Marlon.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
And I remember our first conversation where you saw that you were too busy pleasing mom, so you couldn't really have female relationships be for you.
But, yeah, I've been trying to get out of that more and more.
Now you've got to be able to put your hopes and fears out and see if people really help you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still sitting with that, Bob. I think that's all I got.
I couldn't understand what you just said. We have a terrible connection. But I thanks a lot, Marlon.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
You take care. Bye-bye. I'm Dr. Bob Wright, and you are on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. Greg wants to know, what do I do when a friend really goes off the deep end with drugs and alcohol? Really important question. Hi, Greg. Talk to me.
How you doing?
Greg, you there?
Yes, I am.
So tell me about it, Greg.
Well, I've got a good friend that has suddenly turned to, I think he was doing it before, but he's turned to drugs and alcohol in a big way. And I just don't know how to get him to straighten him out.
Yeah, that's really painful, isn't it? You know, you want to help him straighten up, and what's happening is he's starting to be better friends with drugs and alcohol than he is with you. And he's starting to rely on them rather than you. And it's really hard to get yourself into that. Have you told him that you're concerned?
I have, but it doesn't seem to be having much of an effect, and I'm looking to make a stronger move.
Well, the strongest move I know of that you can make is his family concerned?
I don't think they're aware of it. They don't live near him, so I don't think they know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's tough. And so he's not married?
Yes, he is, but his wife seems to be just not present about it. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know them their home life enough to be able to say that.
Well, the most effective intervention I know of is called an intervention. And what that you do is you get family and friends and loved ones together, but you need to talk to an alcoholism and drug counselor first. And then that alcoholism and drug counselor will advise and coach you through this situation. But it's incredibly painful. One of the things
you have to hire somebody like that to get involved.
Yeah, there are agencies where you can do that, but it sounds like you're pretty alone with it right now. So the first thing you got to do is find allies that are equally concerned about him.
Okay.
And otherwise, short term, that what people do is they say, "Listen, I'm not going to be around you when you're drinking or drugging." Because I'm not going to support you hurting yourself.
Now, that seems like you're cutting them off pretty much, though.
Well, the bind, Greg, is that he's not conscious in a way that makes any difference when he's interacting with you and high.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're pissing in the wind, and, you know, all that does is get you wet.
I'll wear my raincoat, I guess.
Yeah, I guess you better do that because it's really tough. It's really tough if he bottoms out. So the problem with serious alcohol and drug is people oftentimes don't turn around until they've lost everything, and it's incredibly painful to watch that happen. You know, I've had a loved one do it. We got her into treatment facilities. We got her free treatment, and she went right back to it. And then, you know, we watched that happen off and on, and watched somebody really very close to us to really destroy her life. And we talked to people about it, but unfortunately, there was already too much alcohol and drug in the rest of the system. Because a lot of other people drink and drug too much. And so to find people who are willing to step up, be useful. And interventions work sometimes, and sometimes they don't.
Okay, well, okay. I'm going to give it a shot and get in touch with his wife and try to do something.
Okay, well, give me a call and let me know how it goes, Greg.
I will do it.
Thank you. Thanks, Kate. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
So, I mean, Greg's, you know, a good friend. He cares. He wants to do something. He's willing to stick his neck out. Chances are pretty good he'll get hurt. But at least he'll have the integrity of knowing that he cared and he did what he could. So, Todd, he says, why am I able to pick up right where we left off when interacting with my best friend from childhood? It still seems authentic and connected regardless of the span of time since our last conversation. Conversely, when there are prolonged gaps in conversation with other friends, I tend to make up negative reasons or excuses for the gap. Why is that? Well, Todd, we lost you, Todd. Well, I'm going to talk about that a little bit anyway because I think it's really very important. If there's a gap, you're not saying something. Notice there's a gap. Tell them there's a gap. And say, what's going on? If there's a gap, you're leaving the gap. Who's keeping you from asking a question? Who's keeping you from sharing a thought or a feeling? Something's going on where you don't trust each other fully. You haven't developed beyond that level. And in childhood, we've got patterns. I don't know that it's really deep and nourishing. It's nice when you can pick up with somebody as if you'd just seen them yesterday. It's really nice. I like that kind of relationship. But what's really in the way of us being able to do that with anybody? Everybody's got a life. Everybody's got things we can ask about them. Everybody's got things that are going on with them. The question is am I really interested in them? Am I really willing to share with them? Or do I already have too many judgments in the way? And maybe I've misdefined friendship, and that easy, convenient friendship isn't necessarily the most nourishing friendship. One of the things we really look at is the friendship good for you? Is it really, really good for you? That's a whole other story for us to take a look at. And we've got another caller, Denise. Nope. We got Jamie. Jamie, how do you feel grateful and show it? Tell me about that, Jamie.
This is going to be hard. When I saw this, I didn't know what to ask, and I called someone to help me with it and figure it out. I think my biggest problem is I'm new to gratitude. And it's a new thing for me. And I feel like, you know, it's like I can kind of see what I have to do now. You know, I have to tell people what they mean to me. But but just thinking about it is just like scary and makes me want to bawl my eyes out. And
yeah, yeah.
I think that's the deal. But even though I see it, it's still scary. It makes me want to bawl my eyes out.
Lovely, yeah. Jane. That's lovely. It must mean you're starting to care and you're starting to risk and you're starting to feel the vulnerability that you've kept walled off in the past.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like when I saw the question, you know, this is something that's a real big deal to me, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
You know,
because I think I know what I have to do. I just know how hard it's going to be.
Yeah. You know what a lot of people do? I've known a lot, men in particular, who could write poems of gratitude much more easily than they could write. They could say that how grateful they are for somebody.
Yeah, that's me. I'll build you something. I'll do something for you, perform a task, be of service.
Yeah.
But to look you in the eye and, you know, first I have to recognize how someone's been good to me. But then to pull up or just let them see it. Or first I have to feel it in my own self and then just show it to them is just like completely foreign to me.
Well, you know, the late Jim Croce wrote a song about that. He says, let me tell you how I love you in a song, because he said he couldn't really say it straight out to somebody. And it's really a lovely. Do you know Jim Croce?
Yeah, I know the song.
Yeah. So that kind of expresses your sentiments, huh?
Yeah, I could do it on paper.
Yeah, it's something to feel the vulnerability with another person, though, without the paper or the song between you and them.
Yeah, and yeah. That's something, you know, so it's a new thing for me. I think I know what I got to do. It's just hard.
I think that's your opening line, Jamie. Just like Jim Croce says he's going to do it in a song, I think you need to say, this is a new thing for me, and just let it go from there. Say what you've got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it, yeah. Will you try
that? Let me know. You're going to start out, this is a new thing for me, but I want to let you know how much you mean to me. And the thing is just be prepared to feel your heart, to feel your stomach, and to feel your eyes tear up, or whatever else is going to happen when you do it. And let us know how it goes.
Deal.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jamie.
Thank you, Bob.
You know, that's what Jamie's saying is really beautiful. And because it's vulnerable to let somebody know how much you care about them, how grateful you are for them. And it leaves us vulnerable. What if they're not grateful? What if they reject us? It leaves us a lot more vulnerable and easily hurt. We've got to do it and learn and grow. And it's just really lovely that he's moved his life to a position where he experiences that gratitude. And now he's got to learn how to show it. And then that's a sign of a good deal of good growth going on. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio with Gratitude. Your host, Dr. Bob Wright. Our last caller is Fossil. And he, can I still make friends like I did when I was a kid? He's got a question mark. So tell me about that.
Hi, Bob. I have dear friends from school and college, you know, childhood friends with whom I share relationships of, you know, a deep bond of trust and loyalty. And it's a tad bit of intimacy. And, you know, like a previous caller said, we may not talk for a long time, but I feel like I can reach out to them, you know, anytime and ask them for something. And that's how I defined friendship. You know, but lately I moved to a new town and I've experienced loneliness. You know, and I thought that it's because I can't make any real friends. You know, it's okay. I can't make real friends after college. That's that. You know, but lately I've been making new friends based on intimacy from the get-go. And in these relationships, you know, I feel I have intimacy and trust in terms of confidentiality, but I'm still missing that sense of loyalty. Like an old friend asked me, can you trust these real new friends of yours? You know, shit hits the fan. So that's, you know, something I've been thinking about. How to build loyalty.
Well, you know, that's beautiful. And you brought up a very important word, loyalty. But to what are people loyal? Some people, loyal to friendship means that that you stay with them no matter what. That's Greg's bind. Does he just stay friendly and pretend like his friend isn't drinking and drugging? Or is Greg loyal to the truth and to the well-being of his friend? And, you know, loyalty means through thick and thin we stay with each other. Do you want somebody who's just loyal to you as a person, or do you want somebody who's loyal to higher values that you share? So that your friendship is even stronger. If you imagine that you have a common higher value, if you put your fingertips against each other and your elbows about a foot and a half apart, you've got a triangle. The base of the triangle is in your elbows, that between your elbows. That's your friendship. And when you're both friendly around higher values, you can twist and turn, and that friendship will be stronger and more durable. But if you don't have higher values, then twists and turns of life are going to put pressure on and rip that apart. Now, some people, it's the bond of time that defines that friendship. Well, bond of time is fine, but it always doesn't always mean that they're the most uplifting, empowering relationships you can have. And what I find, when there's higher values, then the relationship is more resilient, and it works out between times. Like I told you about that friend of mine, we both had a higher value on personal responsibility, so he worked through our conflict from his end, I worked through it from my end, and our friendship deepened because of the conflict.
You know, I understand what you're saying on making friendships based on higher values. I made some friends like a couple of years back based on those higher religious values. But now my values have changed, and I'm afraid of telling those friends, because I was so into it before, but now I'm like, how do I call them and now tell them, oh, my values have changed. I don't share your values anymore. Can we still be friends? Will you still accept me? Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
Well, and if they don't accept you, then you're going to have to move on and find somebody that does. As long as you're being true to yourself, that's what matters most. I've been I produced my 45th high school reunion, and it's been interesting to look back at what I thought were friendships from childhood. We did a lot of things together. We were on sports teams together. We were on music together. We did a lot of different activities together from the time we were little kids. And what I realized was there were certain people I had an affinity with who were not the people I spent the most time with, did the most things with. The ones that I actually cared the most about were the ones who cared the most about me, the ones who supported me in tough times. And sometimes it isn't until tough times you really find out who the really good friends are. And so I look at it as a sports team, as I said earlier, that you've always got to be having plenty of bench, plenty of people ready to come up and to partner with on what your lives are about, and to support each other through tough times. And that's when we find out who our friends are. But quite frankly, I think that we can still make friends, but not like we did as children. We make friends as adults. We make friends around higher values, which is different than allies. I have allies with whom I work on different issues.
But an ally might be around homelessness. It might be around politics. It might be around economics, around business, around some mutual pursuit. So that's an ally, and some allies become friends, and some friends become allies. But I would always distinguish allies from friends. Allies are a bond around an objective, and friends are a bond around life.
This, you know, what you said about being an ally to a friend, you know, that brings up my own experiences from, you know, friends to whom I try to be an ally based on higher principles. Like I try to convert the relationship, move it into, you know, ally territory, and that was rejected. Like, the higher principles were rejected. And, like, that's how I experienced some of my older friendships.
But you've also got to be willing to be rejected. I've reached out to any number of friends over the years. And in terms of adding a real friend, to me it ends up happening once every year or two. I make friends with people very easily. I add to my friendship circle very easily. But it usually takes me to have some more shared experiences with people before we become enduring friends. And friends with, but for me, it's almost always around higher principles and higher purpose.
I'd like to have that, Bob.
Okay, we've got a bad transmission, but at any rate, thank you very much, Bethel. It's been
great
talking.
Thank you, Bob.
So, thank you, everybody. You're on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. We'd love to have you pick up one of our books, two free chapters from Transform the Science of Spectacular Living at www.rightliving.com/two-free-chapters, or pick up our Transform Training Bundle at www.ttbundle.com, www.ttbundle.com. We'd love to have you do that, and the code on that is blog bundle. And today we've been talking about friendship. We've been celebrating friendship. We've been discussing gratitude about friendship. We've been discussing challenges in friendship. And it's really an important, important thing. We think of it as your life team. And just like sports teams trade players, you can trade people. Some of them move from, like Barb's friend moved from the central team to the bench, or down lower. Some of them move, surprisingly, from lower, further circles out. Doesn't mean low, but you're not that close, and they become bosom buddies very fast. But any way you look at it, we open our hearts. We share what we care about. We support each other. We want to bring out the best in each other. And that's our mission, Bring Out the Best, Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. Thank you very much, and more friends.